You are now tuned into Shotgun Sports USA. Powered by Winchester. Recorded in the U.S.
and streaming all over the world.
We talk to shotgun shooters from all disciplines, championship-winning coaches, gun clubs, world-class target setters, vendors, and industry-leading companies that fuel the sport. If you are into clay target sports, you are at the right place for insider information from some of the best in the world every single week. Remember to subscribe to our podcast, leave us a review, and connect with us on social media. You can also catch our episodes on ShotgunSportsUSA.com. Being a brand name in the clay target industry, Rick Hemingway has said, "Have you ever noticed almost all major sporting events are being run by Pro-Matic traps?" Think about that statement for a minute. He's right, and you may want to consider that before making your next purchase. Rick is the largest Pro-Matic dealer specializing in individual and commercial trap sales. Rick provides skeet, trap, five-stamp, and sporting clays, designs, installs, and service. He also offers accessories such as solar panels, wireless release systems, as well as the hottest item on the market, the ClayBot by Rainier Products. Visit www.backwoodsquailclub.com or give him a call at 843-546-1466. Castellani shooting vests are manufactured in Italy and internationally recognized by elite shooters as the most popular lightweight shooting vests on the market. Castellani vests are especially known for their Italian styling and superior craftsmanship and quality, making them a vest of choice for all shooting disciplines. Ultimate Shooting Accessories is the exclusive supplier of Castellani vests in the United States. Visit ultimateshootingaccessories.com for more information and to place your order.
This week on Shotgun Sports USA, I have a shooter, coach, and a good friend of mine out of Clarksville, Tennessee. I'm excited to have him on the show with me. Please welcome the one and only Tom C. All right, Tom, welcome to the show.
Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, it's been almost a year. You know, I look back, it's been almost a year since you and I've done an episode together, and a lot has changed, so I figured we'd talk about those things and find out what's been going on with you.
Yeah, it's been a pretty rough 2 years, actually. It, you know, it affected everybody's year last year, the COVID, and then I didn't get to shoot a whole lot last year with that, and then, you know, broke my arm this year, so that put quite a damper in the shooting. But yeah, I'm happy to be on. I think it's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, well, you know, you and I talk a lot throughout the year. We shoot together most of the time, and we were supposed to be squatted together at the South Central Regional, which I didn't get to attend. The hurricane canceled the original date and they moved it to Texas, and it kind of threw my plans out, so I couldn't go. But give me your thoughts on the regional.
Yeah, I thought it was a great shoot. I thought the targets were very fitting for a regional of that size. I think first off, I want to tell Joe congrats. He's had an awesome year. He has won a lot this year, and you know, continually been at the top. And so some of the scores he shot on those targets were just, you know, steady scores, just exactly what you should shoot, and hats off to him. But as a shoot, I think that the tournament ran very well. Greater Houston's an awesome place, and they definitely know how to throw a big tournament. I thought the targets were awesome. They were very, very challenging, as you could see by some of the scores, but, you know, there was not a single target that I walked away from and thought that was a stupid target. I thought they were all good, and just challenged you every station the whole way through. So it was kind of an endurance test. You never had a station that let up. It had something that it was going to throw at you the whole way. It's for somebody to look like they spent a lot of time on the targets. And so, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah. I was going to bring up the last regional, which was North Central. We shot together, and that was kind of similar. I mean, I wasn't at the one in Texas, but the one up in Wisconsin was always just, it was steady the whole time. It never let up on you. I feel Southeast Regional was the same way. And now the South Central Regional was like that. So this may be a trend to where when you go to a regional, you better expect to see some good targets and be on your A game the whole time.
Yeah, I really enjoy the targets at the North Central as well. And I think that, I enjoy shooting those type targets because in some settings, in some situations, you can go to a tournament and you have to shoot. You basically can't miss. You have to shoot a 195, 196 to win or to even place. And I think that even with these difficult targets, you still have to shoot a high score. But I think that puts you in a different mindset as a competitor, is to not worry about the score. And I think it tests you more mentally, because I know that myself coming off this big break, it was tough not worrying about what score I was shooting, but how I was managing the course, from not having shot as much this year. It was difficult for me to see or to grade or understand how difficult the course was and what an acceptable score would be or a good score would be or what hard was, just because I didn't see the Southeast Regional. I didn't see what the U.S. Open was. I haven't shot some of those this year, and having that big break, that was a big mental step for me to get over in these last couple of regionals, just because I think the targets were so good that, it's a fine line. I'm not throwing something that's stupid, but throwing something that's difficult.
Yeah.
And I think that they've done a very good job of that.
You're working full time now anyway. You're going to school, working full time, and trying to shoot these big tournaments and put up good scores. It's got to be tough. I mean, are you up at 4 o'clock in the morning, to go to work?
Yeah, I definitely have a full time job now. It keeps me very busy. I typically, get up, I don't know, about four. I get up about five. I won't over exaggerate, but I get up about, five or so and head in, work all day. But that's an interesting subject to get into, because I've had a lot of people ask me about that, whether work gets in the way of shooting. And I've thought about it. I wouldn't say a lot, but it's been something that crosses my mind when people ask me that, because it is a full-time, job. But I think everybody gets to a point where life gets
over.
A little busier.
Yeah,
it gets a little busier, and you just have to learn how to manage it. If you look at somebody like Anthony or Corey, they've definitely figured out how to manage, a full life, having a family and building houses and businesses and working every day and all that kind of stuff. So it's just another challenge to overcome, but I don't think it's anything that has affected me tremendously based on, my past, I guess you'd say.
Yeah. Do you think that if you didn't have the traps at your house like you do, that you might have taken a bigger hit with working than you have?
I think that I would have taken a bigger hit my whole life, honestly, because before I started shooting, or, I guess teaching full time, I was in high school and I was playing basketball, and I was caught up in all the things that a high school, teenager kid gets caught up in. But also throughout the summers, when shooting season is really heavy, I was working at the oil company, not quite in the capacity that I am now, but I would be a delivery person. I'd have some long hours. I would, you know, kind of, I would do all the dirty jobs, all the bad jobs throughout the summers when I wasn't at school. And even through my early years of college, I would work part-time and go to school part-time. And so I kind of been working through this, I guess, my whole career. And when I take the time to think back, I truly think that I shot really well, maybe even better, before I started teaching full time. I got to a point when I got tired of slow stepping it through school. I figured that I would teach full time for an income and go to school full time because the teaching was a little more flexible. And it got to a point where I needed to enter into the business. There were things that happened within the business that I needed to enter into it. And so I'm trying to finish up school now, as well as, you know, work full time in a pretty high role within our company. But at the same time, that gives me the freedom to come home in the afternoons. If it's a pretty day, it's really not out of the ordinary for me to text my dad or get with him and say, you know, let's be at the house at 3 o'clock, or let's be at the house at 2:30, and let's open the machines up, let's shoot, and, you know, do that two or three times a week, which is pretty steady practice. And so I guess it's something to overcome, like I've said before, but things just change, and you just have a way of adapting. And you know, when I really take a step back and look at it, I think that the working hasn't really affected my performance per se as much as some other things that have happened here lately. But it's just a change away from shooting, I guess.
Yeah.
So I don't see it as big of a deal as some people might, because I knew that I had done this before, just in a little bit different capacity, a little bit different role. You know, I had worked and shot and done school all at the same time before. So, you know, it's just another thing to work with.
Yeah. Before we move on, a lot of people have probably asked you or wondered what Sea Oil Company does. And, you know, the first time you hear it, you think you just sell oil, which is not the case. Kind of go into what you do and we'll move on.
So our company is 27 years old. My dad started it. Mom and dad started it from the ground up. They you know, kind of mortgaged everything they had. Typical first generation business story, just a short story of putting it. But now we've evolved over the years. At one time, we were a really big freight carrier, which is basically somebody that hauls fuel for people like Pilot, Mapco, and Walmart, and all those other big interstate brands that you would see. We were basically just the freight operation that would haul the fuel for them. And we got up to, you know, we had a lot of trucks and running 24 hours a day all over a huge area. And then we got to a point where we had a lot of employee turnover, a lot of driver turnover. It got to a point where it was such a big geographic area that it was really hard to manage trucks and employees remotely with the personnel that we had. And because of that, we had a few accidents. And when you have an accident with a fuel truck hauling 8,000 gallons of gas, it's a pretty big deal. Obviously, as we had a couple of wrecks, which the more exposure we have with the more trucks over the bigger area, we had higher probability of having accidents, and that's what ended up happening. And it took I guess my mom and dad took some time to reflect on what their past had been in the business and what we were doing now, where they wanted the company to go. And so at that point, we kind of shifted our focus away from being a freight hauler and hauling other people's fuel for a fee, and decided to start selling our own products, which is where we are today. We've grown that in the past 5 years. So about 2016, we really made this change, I guess, or switch as a company. And since then, we've really grown in fuel sales towards, the construction industry, rock quarries, ready-mix companies, gas stations. We sell to gas stations. We don't haul. We have trucks that haul for them, but we don't. It's our own fuel that we're selling to them. And we also sell lubricants like engine oils, transmission fluids, all that kind of stuff to shops and, again, construction people. And we have a few other divisions of our company that have to do with fuel quality and polishing fuel, which is basically cleaning diesel fuel, taking the impurities out of it. And we also have kind of an environmental division of our company as well. So we've transitioned into a bigger company, and that's as that transition began to happen, it became more evident that I had been around the business and my brothers had been around the business for ever since we could remember. It's pretty much the only thing that we've ever known, other than shooting for me. But it was evident that I needed to come into the business and really help manage this growth and kind of add some structure to the company that we could grow on. And so that's kind of what we do. We spend a lot of time in Nashville. We spend a lot of time. We have an office in Nashville, Paducah, and Hopkinsville. We go all the way up into Missouri and Illinois, and we have just shy of 100 employees. And so, that's kind of what we do.
People listening, if you drive by one of these big construction sites and you see a fuel tank, that's what they do. They set these big tanks out and move with the construction companies. And it's a big business. I've been up to see the operation. It's crazy at the stuff that goes on with inside that business. So anyway, let's get back to shooting. Texas Nationals in a few weeks. Are you going?
Yep, I'll be there.
Is Steve going?
He actually is not going.
That's too bad.
Grayson's going. But he's, he went to Houston to the regional, and being so close together, somebody's got to stay back and run the business. So
yeah. You've been a Perazzi shooter or shot Perazzi since you was a kid, and you ventured off into another manufacturer a couple of years ago, and now you're back with Perazzi. What is it about a Perazzi that you like so much?
That's a good question, because everybody's answer, I think, would be different based on whatever gun they are used to shooting. I grew up shooting a Perazzi, and I think there are a lot of other good manufacturers and a lot of other good products out there. But for myself, Perazzi has always been what I've shot ever since I was 8 or 9 years old. Started taking lessons from Wendell at that age, and I had a Perazzi, and I really think that the balance, the fit, the way the gun moves is second nature to me. It's just kind of what I go to. I feel as if when you shoot with a gun through the ages that I did, which were 8 years old to basically 20 years old, I think those are a lot of crucial developmental years and muscle memory and, going through all my lessons with Wendell and growing as a shooter and having bad days and good tournaments and good wins and a lot of confidence behind the gun. And once you shoot the same gun for that many years and you go through those years of, teenage years, and all through there, you obviously build a lot of confidence with that gun, and you kind of grow around that gun. And I'm very thankful that I did, because I think that's a gun I can win with on the biggest stages, and that's what everybody should shoot. I hear some people ask me, some younger shooters that, are good shots will ask me, hey, what about this? They're offering me this. What kind of gun deal do you have? Or different things like that. And after going through the experience that I did, I think that, like I had said before, there are many, many good manufacturers out there, but you have to shoot what you can win with. You have to shoot what you have the most confidence in. And that, for me, that's Perazzi. And I like it for a number of reasons. I enjoy the people, and it's kind of a family that I had been in for so many years that it was hard to not be in it anymore. And so for all those reasons kind of combined, that's why I chose to, you know, go the rest of my career shooting a Perazzi.
They seem to be a good gun. I mean, I've never shot one, actually. I mean, I'd always said I'd like to shoot one just to see what they're about. But, I mean, you and David and Wendell and several others shoot them. There's got to be something to them, you know?
Yeah, they just move very well. They point very well. I shoot a 34-inch barrel, and I've shot a 34 since I was 12 years old. And it's almost like a third arm in a way. I know where it's going to point. I know how it's going to shoot. I know how it's going to feel. And I think everybody that has a gun like that is the gun they need to shoot. So
yeah,
I just kind of stick into my advice there. And on top of that, I just love the company and love everything about it. So
what Perazzi do you shoot?
I have a unique gun. I have a MX-8. Which is typically sold with a leaf spring in the triggers. That's the biggest difference between the MX-8 and the MX-12, which is basically an MX-2000 and an MX-2000S, kind of the same thing.
Okay.
And I have a MX-8 that has detachable triggers, but they have coil springs like an MX-12. In the trigger mechanism. So it's kind of a combination of an MX-8 and an MX-12. So I custom built that gun in 2016 when I was at the factory in Italy. And I have to say, it's been fabulous. It turned out great. And knock on wood, I've never had any problems out of it.
You almost got to a spot where you weren't going to be able to shoot a gun anymore. And earlier this year, you probably thought your career was over from the way you looked. And it's kind of like Mark Windsor said when I did a podcast with him and his shoulder, you know, you broke your arm in a bad place and your right-handed shooter, you broke your right arm, you know, that whole process, I'm sure had you a little worried about your shooting career. Tell me what happened and then tell me your initial thoughts after it happened.
If I were to say that I don't think I'll ever live this down, I think I'll always have people make fun of me for this, but anyways, I was at a buddy's house, and I had gone over there to just hang out, and Grayson was with me. We were there, and they were fixing a ride. Well, Grayson and I had plans to go do other things. Well, it was one of those deals where they were there and want me to ride, and I finally just thought, well, it's a big open field here.
Dirt bikes. Dirt bikes, Tom.
Yeah, dirt bikes. Okay. And it's a big open field here, and I'll ride around this field. Truly to goodness, I can't get hurt. And, you know, I had never really ridden a dirt bike. I'd ridden everything else, but I'd never ridden a dirt bike. So I figured I would get on it and figure it out just like anything else I've ever driven. But that was the case. So I get all suited up, helmet on and everything. And I start riding around this little field. It's pretty wide open. I ride for, I don't know, 10 minutes or so, a couple laps, not very long. And it didn't seem that hard. It just didn't seem that hard. I didn't feel unsafe or anything like that. Well, by this time they had seen me and they were kind of getting all ready to go. And they were like, well, you know, he'll hold his own. So everybody kind of took off and I kind of took off in the pack. Well, I don't really remember what happened much after this. As we went down into a field where they were going to ride, the next thing I remember is just waking up in the hospital. So I can't really tell you what happened. I never felt really unsafe on it. I have a lot of theories, but nobody really saw me wreck. But basically I hit a tree and destroyed the dirt bike. My helmet came off. It was laying probably 30 yards away. Had to have been running pretty quick when I hit it. And I just broke my arm just right above my elbow, basically. And it wasn't just a fracture or anything like that. It was limp. We'll put it that way. It was pretty bad. So I didn't have any reaction there because I was knocked out. It knocked me out for 3 or 4 hours, I'm guessing. But my first memory was being in the hospital and taking some CT scans, and they were trying to move my arm, and it really hurt. So I can remember that, and I can remember getting back in the hotel room and still not really knowing what had happened, or not the hotel room, but the hospital room. I can remember sitting there and waking up, coming back conscious and looking over and seeing some of the doctors over there and having an IV in my left arm, and my head was kind of itching, and I had really bruised my face up and my chin, and my leg was really cut up and just all kinds of stuff, bruised everywhere. I can remember trying to feel around, what's wrong with me? Things were itching and hurting and all that kind of stuff. Well, I tried to move my right hand to scratch my face, kind of feel my face. And my first reaction, you can imagine how that would feel, but about the top 6 inches of my arm moved, and that was about it. I just thought, there's no way I broke my arm. This has got to be a dream. And I have to say, I was freaking out a lot, but I never had a broken bone or anything, so I didn't really know what to expect. And I really didn't start to worry a lot about shooting until I had wrecked on a Saturday, and I went home that night. Sunday, I sat at home all day, so I had a lot of time to think that day. And that's when I really started thinking about, how's this going to impact my shooting and all those kind of things? Because up until Sunday morning, I was still pretty drugged up and out of it. I reached out to Mark. I knew he had had a similar scenario. He'd broken his shoulder collarbone. And so I was asking him kind of what he had done, what he had been through, and different things like that. But I tell you, it was a scary moment. It's scary times for sure. It was quite depressing.
When did you realize you had knocked your teeth out?
I actually did not know. The doctors did not know I had broken my teeth, and because it wasn't my front ones, it was my back ones. I guess where the helmet was on, I guess I hit the tree and I bit down so hard that it crushed my back molars. And I didn't realize that until I got out of the hospital. I was on the way back to it was actually Grayson's house. My parents were coming to pick me up, and I was headed to her house. And I was feeling around in my mouth, and I pulled out a piece of a tooth. And so I was still so out of it that they looked in my mouth and figured out what had happened. So yeah, it was pretty bad. I mean, I couldn't move real good for probably 3 or 4 days because I was just so bruised and hurt.
That's been a long process. When did you do this?
The day before Easter.
So how long did it take before you could do anything again?
A lot of people have asked me that, and the bone took between, somewhere between 14 and 16 weeks to heal. And I could drive a couple of days later. I actually only missed about half a day's worth of work when I did that. But, I obviously didn't do a whole lot of work. I just did a lot of directing. But I could drive and everything, but I couldn't operate any equipment. I couldn't write for a long time. The biggest thing that took the longest to heal is the nerve damage. And that was something that I didn't think would be that big of a deal until probably 6 weeks into the healing process, because I went to the doctor and I couldn't move any of my fingers. I couldn't open my hand. My hand was just kind of shut. And I didn't even think about it. I was worried about healing the bone up, and the doctor told me that the bone would heal way before the nerve would heal. And the nerve is it spirals around your arm and goes down and operates your fingers and helps you have grip strength and the strength to open your hand and all that kind of stuff. And that nerve had been damaged. And he said that that would take by far the longest, probably 6 months or so. And at the time, I didn't think that much of it, but that was the most frustrating thing to try to get over, because I got out of the sling probably 8 to 9 weeks into it. And so I could kind of move my arm a little bit. I didn't have any strength hardly, but I just couldn't do anything with my right hand. And so when I started shooting about week 14 or so, I could pick the gun up and I felt comfortable holding the gun and shooting. And I could hold the gun. Obviously, I was very rusty. I didn't have hardly any strength in my arm, so I couldn't shoot for very long. But I just couldn't load my gun very well. I couldn't open any shells or anything like that. As I built up strength, my moves got better, and I could see everything improving. But for the longest time, my hand just wouldn't work. And I even had some trouble up at the North Central Regional, unloading my gun, loading it, and I wouldn't contribute that to having any effect on my shooting. It probably did, being realistic, but I tried not to think about it, put it that way. And up until probably 3 or 4 weeks ago, I haven't been able to fully operate my hand, but now it's getting better, and I've got a lot of, I don't think there's anything that I can't do at this point. I'm still building a little bit of muscle back in my arm, but it's pretty much back. It doesn't keep me from doing anything. We'll put it that way.
Are you still facing complications with it?
The only thing is the absolute only thing that I still can feel with it is from on my right hand, like from my middle finger. If you were to draw a straight line from your middle finger to the left side of your wrist, anything from there to the left, like towards your thumb, is kind of on the top of my hand, is kind of numb. Now, my thumb is fine, but that area right in there is still kind of numb. But they said that's just the nerve healing. So they say it'll eventually go away. But in terms of strength in my hand and arm and the way I can move it, it's all back to normal.
Yeah. So there shouldn't be any reason for you to have any more bad scores then, right?
Well, I don't want you to take all my excuses away now. I was going to say it's been a challenge. Not as much physically coming back. I mean, obviously the things I just mentioned were challenging, but when you take that long of a break, don't compete. You have to warm up a little bit, I'd say. It's been more of a challenge than I gave it credit for.
Well, the year's basically over, the shooting year. Nationals is this month. What are you going to do to prepare for Nationals?
I was talking to a few people today, actually, about that. Not that specifically, but it leads into my answer. But I think that as a competitor, especially, most people do this. I know I do. But if you're competitive at all, you do this. It's easy to get caught up in the scores that you shoot, in the, a performance based upon comparison to other individuals within your class. And it's really easy to get caught up in all that stuff and being really conscious about scores and, conscious about how you're holding the gun and moving the gun, all that type of stuff. But I was talking to someone earlier, and I felt really good in my last round of the South Central Regional in Texas for probably the first time, and well, since before I broke my arm, obviously. But I felt really good, and I think the biggest goal I have is, and the biggest relief I have is the pure enjoyment just to shoot, not the enjoyment derived from winning or based off of putting up a huge score or beating one particular person or beating a whole field of people, but But knowing that I am shooting, you know, challenging myself to shoot the best that I think I can shoot. And I just think that's really enjoyable to get to a point where you're so focused on your shooting and how your performance is and how you're making your moves, how you're seeing birds. And I just think that, you know, that makes you such a pure shooter. And it's fun to me to be in that state of mind. And I think that's where most success is achieved from, is being enjoying your own shooting and enjoying perfecting your own shooting. And so I think that as I prepare for nationals, that'll be something that I really work towards in my practices, is not whether or not I feel that I can compete with other people, or I just want to be happy with perfecting my own shooting. And that may be a really complicated David Radulovich type answer, but I think that most people get caught up in how they place and external factors that they base their success off of and their enjoyment off of. And I think when you're shooting really good, that your enjoyment should come from more of a technical side of things, you know, how you feel about your move and working on seeing the bird better. And I just think competing with yourself is the best way to compete at all.
Every year, new people show up to nationals. There's people you have never seen. People, I mean, we don't see everybody, but you know, there's new people every year that go. So for someone that's going for the first time, or even someone that's been more than once, how can you tell them how to be successful at nationals? And I don't mean how to win. I'm talking about, how do you have a successful trip? How do you feel good about yourself? What do you need to do? Just give me some pointers.
I think for the first time at a tournament like nationals, as big as nationals is, and as much as there is to soak in, I think that to go down there for your first time and just try to soak it all in and just enjoy the experience of being there, enjoy, you know, the 4 days of all the vendors and seeing all the people, and, you know, going to the shoots that they do at night, you know, the north versus south, all that type stuff. And I just think hanging out with friends and enjoying just taking it all in and not getting too caught up in, like I was saying before, your performance against other people. And I think that's a successful trip for a first timer, to go down there, just experience the whole all of nationals, because it's a lot to take in.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about nationals the other day, and the guys that have won and girls that have won. It's a 4-day tournament, okay? And you know, you could be on your A game and face bad weather, and then the next person may not. They win. So what makes it complicated, in my opinion, is you've got four, and everybody knows this has been, but you got 4 days of shooting and different rotations. And if you're on the wrong rotation one of those days, it could mess you up. And that's what I think so complicated about nationals, is you never know what you're going to get when you go.
I think it goes back to what a lot of people have been saying for a long time. I think that the game would go to another level of legitimacy and fairness if there was some type of structure where the top guys in each class were to shoot on the same rotations, in the same courses, you know, or to shoot the same courses on the same rotations, or as close as you can get to the same times on the same courses on the same days. Because there have been a lot of scenarios where I've been shooting really good, and you get out to the yellow course, which is a really open course, and you have a lot of wind, or the green course. It can be affected by the wind as well, or
all of them can.
Yeah, they all can. I mean, they all can be affected by different things, but you know, I think that's something everybody has talked about forever, but we've never done anything about it. And I think that would be something everybody would enjoy doing. I don't see how anybody could could complain about that, you know, making the game more fair and more legitimate. I mean, because it's hard enough as it is. And then when you get caught in a bad rotation with, you know, lighting or rain or wind or whatever it may be, it just, it kind of, I don't know about knocks, I wouldn't say knocks you out of the tournament because that's part of the game, but it adds a whole nother element to trying to compete regardless of what level you're shooting on.
You've got the, you know, they got an early rotation that shoots the weekend before and you shoot all the targets in 2 days. And then, you know, the towards the end, you got to shoot it in 4 days. So it's all over the place as far as a week long tournament where weather can affect
right.
you, you know? So, but it should be fun. It's fun going. And, I know you're ready to see me. I mean, that's just,
it's been too long. I tell you, I at least have to FaceTime you about once every 6 months, or I just, you know, I just can't handle it.
Well, we're not going to get to shoot together. So, and your dad's not coming. So, I like seeing your dad.
Yeah. You probably wouldn't come around me now that he's not coming.
Yeah. I mean, me and Steve, we like to hang out together, like to go eat places.
Everybody, I think everybody just enjoys seeing him.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And he's fun to shoot with. So, all right. Well, Tom, thanks for coming on tonight. Look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks in Texas, and I hope you do good.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks down there, and I'm looking forward to seeing everybody else as well.
Now, are you going to put your teeth in before you go, or what you going to do about that?
Well, you know, it was a funny thing. I was down there in Texas with David, and we went out to eat. And he wanted to go get some hard candy afterwards, and cracked, you know, kind of chipped and cracked one of my wooden teeth. And so I'm in the process now of whittling a wooden tooth back down to put in. So
yeah,
I'm hoping I'll have that done before I go to Texas, so nobody will, you know,
yeah,
ask me.
Just don't smile. You don't have to do it before you go. Just don't smile.
I'll try to remember that.
All right, man. Well, I'll see you down there, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, see you.